This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Lisa Mullins in for Meghna Chakrabarty. 99 summers ago, Europe threw itself into one of the greatest and bloodiest military calamities of all time, the First World War, the Great War, the war to end all wars.
There were root causes, of course, alliances, treaties, ancient enmities, but in the end, with all the armies firmly dug into trenches, the war is remembered mostly as a human meat grinder, a conflict that chewed up a generation of young lives.
The war killed 12 million soldiers, most of them Russians, French, British, Germans, and Austrians. The U.S. joined their European allies late in the war, but still 2 million Americans fought in the trenches, and many of them came from New England.
10 years ago, Maine writer Richard Rubin set out to interview the last surviving American veterans of World War I. All of them were over a century old. They were the last living, breathing links to a conflict that so profoundly shaped the world as we know it today. Richard Rubin joins me now to talk about his book, The Last of the Doughboys, The Forgotten Generation and Their Forgotten World War. And Richard, welcome to Radio Boston. It's really good to have you. It's a very powerful book, I'd like to say, and thanks for coming on to talk about it.
Oh, well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Well, let me start with the basic question. What prompted you to search out these elderly veterans and take on this project?
Well, I was supposed to be working on a different book, and I was procrastinating, as writers are wont to do one day. This was in early 2003, and I was listening to a radio program very much like this one, and there was a gentleman on there, a guest, talking about the World War II generation. And he said that World War II veterans were dying off at the rate of 1,000 per day and that we needed to get their stories now while we still could. And I couldn't agree more with that. But for some reason that day, I thought, well, what about World War I veterans? I'd heard lots of World War II stories, but not very many World War I stories. And I wondered if it were too late. And I did the math in my head. It was 2003, as I said, 85 years after the armistice. I figured that somebody who was 20 years old in 1918 would be 105 in 2003. Pretty old, but I knew that occasionally people did live to be that old. So I thought I'd see if I could find two or three.
And how many did you end up finding and talking to?
I ended up interviewing several dozen men and women. The youngest was 101, and the oldest was 113.
You know what struck me early on in the book, and by the way, we've got some tape we're going to play, but let me ask you this question first. You said you were nervous interviewing these people. Why nervous?
Well, for one thing, I'd never met anybody that old before, and I had no idea what speaking with them would be like. I didn't know what their memories might be like, if they even would have memories that old. I just have a tremendous respect for my elders, and there weren't any people I'd ever met who were that much my elders than these folks. And I also realized that this was kind of the very last minute to get these stories, and I didn't want to blow the one chance I had. It was hard enough to find these people. It took several months just to find one person to interview.
Sure.
And after having gone through that process, I really wanted to make the most of that opportunity.
Well, let's hear one of the voices from your book. This is a brief bit of tape that you recorded. This is J. Lawrence Moffett from Orleans, Massachusetts. The clip is from 2003. He was 106 years old, and you asked him if he was ever in a gas attack. And here's what he said.
I was severely gassed several times, but I never went to medical for it. I just lost my voice, and eventually it would come back. And after a while, you didn't bother to put the gas mask on. You smelled the gas. And if it wasn't severe, you didn't bother to put your gas mask on.
So gassed several times. He got to the point where he never even bothered to put his gas mask on. You know, for as brutal as World War II was in many instances, there were only a handful of instances of chemical weapons on the battlefield. But in World War I, it was widespread, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And if there's one thing that everybody knows about World War I, it's poison gas.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so awful that if you can imagine such a thing happening, all combatants in World War II agreed not to use it in combat in war. I mean, how terrible does a weapon have to be before everybody unilaterally agrees not to use it? Mm-hmm. But that clip was to me one of the most remarkable moments in the hundreds of hours of conversations I had with these centenarians, because, as I said, if there's one thing everybody knows about World War I, it's poison gas and the terrible, terrible things it did to people. It could kill you and blind you, maim you in any number of ways. And to ask this man, first of all, if he'd ever been exposed to gas, and for him to say, matter-of-factly, why, of course, all the time, and then to just sort of downplay it and say, I just lost my voice for a few days and eventually it would come back. That was really something I discovered first about him and then really about almost everybody I interviewed, is that they were just tremendously stoic. I don't know if that is a function of their generation or if it's just a function of the type of people who are capable of living to be 106 years old. But J. Lawrence Moffatt said to me at another point that day that nothing was ever hard for him. And if you read his story, you know he saw some truly awful things. And for him to reflect back on his life after 106 years and make a statement like nothing has ever been hard for me really says a lot kind of a person he was.
And Richard Rubin, speaking of stoicism and what these soldiers went through, I mean, we forget, I think, particularly in America, maybe not so much so in Europe, but this war was particularly nasty. And you have some very, very moving descriptions in there about what these men went through, the trench warfare and literally the piles of bodies at given points that people would be stepping over. It was truly, a horrific meat grinder of an affair, all fought at very close quarters. That's one of the things that I took away from the early descriptions in your book.
It's true. It was really warfare of a type nobody had ever seen before, not just Americans, but nobody really. And, we were insulated from that war by an ocean for the first 2.5 years. And reports would come over listing casualty figures that were too high for people even to digest. But what didn't come over, at least until we entered the war, was really the nature of the war, what it was like to be in a trench, in a filthy, muddy ditch for days on end, just sitting there and waiting for something to happen. And this was, as I said, an experience that Americans or really anybody, nobody had ever had before. And they were really unprepared for it. I don't think anybody could have really been adequately prepared for it. But they handled it, I think, to a great extent with aplomb. Of course, a lot of them didn't have didn't handle it too well after the war, and I've read a great many memoirs or narratives of heroic service in the war that end with the suicide afterward of the hero.
Mm. You call this the Forgotten Generation and their war the Forgotten War. Why is that?
Well, I think that there are quite a few reasons for it. At one time, anywhere you go, I say, you'll find a monument to the First World War in this country. Any town you visit, you'll find something commemorating the people who fought and won the First World War in this country. Those were all built in the 1920s. So for a while, it was terribly important to Americans to remember that war. But then the Great Depression came along and World War II and World War I kind of got pushed into the background. And the people who fought and won that war in this country or from this country weren't the kind of people to attract attention to themselves. That's just not what you did. That's not how they were raised. They were raised to understand that life was hard and it was hard for everybody. A great many of the men and women I interviewed lost siblings in childhood. A startling number of them lost their fathers while they were still very young. And I think they grew up believing that life was hard. That's just the way it was, and everybody had it hard. And so they didn't attract attention to themselves. They didn't clear their throats when people started talking about the World War II generation as the greatest generation and say, hey, what about us? We raised the greatest generation during the Great Depression, and we won a World War II.
Yeah. Well, Richard Rubin, it's such an important story and beautifully done. Thank you so much for coming on our show to talk about it.
Well, it was my pleasure, and I'd just like to say if people want to see video clips of Lawrence Moffatt and other World War I veterans, they can find them at thelastofthedoughboys.com.
And we have a link to that at radioboston.org. Richard Rubin is author of The Last of the Doughboys, The Forgotten Generation, and Their Forgotten War. Thanks very much, Richard Rubin.
It's been a pleasure.